Hi, my name is Bill Nesto.
Hi, my name is Fran DiSavino.
And we've written together The World of Sicilian Wine, and you can follow up on your interest on The World of Sicilian Wine by connecting to our blogspot, which is
www.theworldofsicilianwine.blogspot.com. We look forward to hearing from you, radio listeners.
Welcome to Wine and Dine. My name is Lynn Crelo Chamberlain, host. You're listening to iWine Radio. Today on Wine and Dine, we're going to meet the authors of the book called The World of Sicilian Wine that's published by the University of California Press by Bill Nesto, Master of Wine, and Francis DiSavino. Bill Nesto is a founder of the Wine Studies Program at Boston University, an expert on the wines of the world. He has written for Gastronomica, Santé, and Massachusetts Beverage Business. Francis DiSavino is an attorney who has a background in medieval and Renaissance studies and is Bill's partner in life and on the wine road. This is a fantastic read. If you are studying philosophy, people in college, not just for wine people, but people who are studying Greek and Roman literature and mythology and Italian history and Renaissance history. I mean, there's so many applications for this book beyond just learning about wine.
Right, Lynn. And in fact, Bill and I took our first trip to Sicily together in June of 2008. Bill was writing an article for Santé magazine, and we were there to explore the island for 2 weeks. In advance of our studies, we began to study more about Sicilian culture because we felt committed to revealing more about Sicily and its history than the kind of the modern popular culture, which was largely shaped by The Godfather. And as we went back to our classical texts, specifically Homer's Odyssey and Virgil's Aeneid and Ovid's Metamorphosis, we discovered a passage in Homer's Odyssey that largely characterized Sicilians as inhabiting a wildly fertile place, but lawless, and being a people that lacked the skills to cultivate their soil, essentially culture. And it was in our experience, those 2 weeks that we spent in Sicily, that we discovered, in fact, a people that was deeply attached to their land. And we are committed in this book to revealing really the story of Sicilians and their relationship with their land through the prism of wine. It's a story of culture and agriculture through all its various historical epics.
Fran, let me ask you, before we talk to Bill, let me ask you, because you wrote Chapter 1, which sets the stage for the world of Sicilian wine. Your comment about the 800-900 years BC, where you were reading and learning that people thought that the Sicilians were uncultured because they didn't know how to cultivate their land. But in fact, one of the definitions of civilization is that people can be, they're not nomadic anymore. They are growing vines, which have to be cared for year after year. And there were vines on Sicily at the time, right?
There is botanic evidence of wild vines that were growing, but to our knowledge, there's no archaeological evidence that there was the systematic cultivation of vines.
Okay.
Archaeologists have demonstrated that it was both the Greeks in eastern and southeastern Sicily and the Phoenicians on the west coast of Sicily who, in the same period, the 8th century BC, introduced their knowledge of vine cultivation and wine making. I think that it has been theorized that the Mycenaean Greeks, going back to the 12th and 13th century BC, introduced wine as a luxury product in their trading with some of the indigenous peoples of Sicily, the Sicils and the Sicans, going back.
I was wondering how that was pronounced. So Sicil and Sican.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm. So that's the Sicils is from whence the island name Sicily came from?
Correct. They're believed to be a people that came from what is now Calabria, the toe of Italy, to the eastern part of Sicily. And the Sicans, who inhabited western Sicily, are thought to have come from the Iberian Peninsula, what is now known as Spain.
Whoa. Bill, both you and your wife are Italian heritage. Where was your family originally from in Italy?
Half my family came from Apulia, near Bari, and the other half is came from Sicily, Ragusa.
Oh, yeah.
Ragusa.
Okay. So when you went with when you two went to Sicily in 2008, Bill, was that your first time visiting Sicily?
No, I had been there two or three times before. As early as 1995, I had been at a conference on the island of Pantelleria, which is in the book. My notes. I was able to find my notes of that visit. A friend, though, is Fran, tell us about your heritage.
So I am as well 100% Italian. My father's side is from Apulia, near Bari. My mother's side is from Naples, near the Naples area, but her surname is Saporito, which is a well-known and celebrated name, as Bill points out in the preface, dating from the late 13th century in Sicily.
Mm.
And well, yeah, many Sicilians told us that they were sure the Saporitos must have emigrated from Sicily to the Naples area because for many centuries, Sicily was part of what was known as the Kingdom of Two Sicilies.
If not genetically, she's half Sicilian in spirit.
Oh, you know, sometime during this interview, I would love to hear you speak Italian because I remember reading in the beginning here that comment, I think it was from Bill, that you are fluent in Italian. And when you're.
Ho imparato la lingua nei ultimi 10 anni. È molto difficile per me perché il accento è molto difficile per una persona di 60 anni per parlare. What I was saying that I've learned the language in the last 10 years and given that I'm about 60 years old, it's difficult. I can learn the grammar pretty well, but the accent is less easy to come to. Fran, however, learned the language in high school and college. Mm. Fran, how did you learn? Speak a little Italian and tell the audience how you learned.
Prima ho studiato latino per 7 anni. Poi quando sono andata all'università, Wellesley College. Ho cominciato di studiare l'italiano a un'età più giovane, 18 anni. Ho studiato per 6 anni, poi sono andata a Firenze per vivere con una famiglia fiorentina che non parlava l'inglese e ho studiato all'Università di Firenze. So I said, in comparison with Bill, I had the opportunity to begin my studies of Italian at age 18 when I entered Wellesley College. And before that, I had studied Latin for 7 years. And
whoa.
Latin truly is the blueprint for modern Romance languages, but in particular Italian.
Okay.
So it was almost intuitive. And then after 3 years at Wellesley, when I graduated, I moved to Florence and lived with a Florentine family that did not speak English. And I studied at the University of Florence.
Did you study law at the University of Florence?
I did. I studied European international law. International law and European Union law, but continued my studies of medieval Renaissance studies on my own outside of the university.
The language was very, very helpful to us. Most of our sources were primary and written in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we did most of our interviews in Italian, and particularly there's 3 chapters which are narrative chapters where we actually recorded and videotaped them to help us record those 3 narrative chapters. One is called Vino Perpetuo, the other one is called In the Heart of Sicily, and the third is called The Garden Vineyard. The first 2 I wrote, the last one Fran wrote, and without our knowledge of Italian, it would not have been so vibrant and real, because we, you know, particularly, you know, in the Heart of Sicily, I spoke to basically a 90-year-old vine grafter, and I could never have communicated with somebody like that if I hadn't known some Italian.
Yeah.
And for both of us, it was essential, and it was essential to write the book.
Bill, do you sing, or do you have a good ear for music?
Okay. I appreciate music, but I try to sort of play various instruments, and I never excelled, so I can't say that, no.
How about you, Frances?
I played piano. I studied piano from the time I was 6 years old until 18, and I'd like to sing, but I wouldn't make any claims. But I love the Italian accent, and
yes.
It came very easily to me, and it is musical.
It's very.
Maybe it was having studied Latin for so long that the grammar and structure of the language were intuitive, and I really felt it was something in me that I was expressing. And in many ways, I would say our research on this book felt the same. It really felt like a quest, like we were kind of seeking to reveal something. We had a larger purpose, and that's what made the research and the writing so exquisitely fun.
You know, even in Italian, there isn't a book like this, which is an in-the-round analysis of the Sicilian wine industry. There are works which show bits and pieces, but there's nothing complete and with one voice. And Fran and I, more or less, because of our close working relationship, have a unified voice in the book. Some people have mentioned it's hard to
tell the difference.
To tell the difference, yeah.
Because it is one story. It's a story about Sicilians and their land, their relationship with it, expressed through the medium of wine, from the 8th century B.C. to our present day.
Well, is the book translated into Italian, or is there plans to do so?
No, it isn't translated, and there are no plans to do so.
Okay.
We hope that it will be, because in the back of our minds... we were writing it for Sicilians because they need their history.
I'm sure. I kind of got that feeling. Okay, we're going to go to a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with the authors of The World of Sicilian Wine, Bill Nesto, Master of Wine, and Frances Di Savino. You're listening to Wine and Dine. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Robert Camuto, and I've just written a book called Palmento, A Sicilian Wine Odyssey. It's more than a book about wine. It's a book about culture and people and the great terroir of Sicily. The title Palmento refers to an ancient system of presses that have existed for thousands of years and were believed to have their origins in Sicily.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. Welcome to Wine and Dine. I really am not, could not give you information on this question that I'm going to pose to Bill Nesto, Master of Wine, the co-author of The World of Sicilian Wine, and that is, how much wine from Sicily is available in the United States or in North America? Bill, I mean, I've interviewed a couple winemakers. I've interviewed a couple people, media who've been in Sicily. But I have no clue as to how many, what kind of selection is there of Sicilian wines in the United States?
Right. Off the top of my head, I don't know the volume of imports. And I know it's a very important market, particularly in the quality range. There's other markets like Germany, for instance, which gets imports a high volume of very, very basic Vino di Tavola and EGT wine. But we import more quality wines, and there's actually at the moment a really vibrant interest in Sicilian wine, particularly among people who know Italian wine, and particularly perhaps strongest in the restaurant industry, because they're realizing the variety and quality of various wine types. Most recently, there's been a great interest in the wines of Etna, because Etna gives us an appellation or wine region which has which we can easily compare to Burgundy and Piemonte, to both regions because of the red wines that are produced, made from the Nerello Mascalese grape, which have some of the aromas of red Burgundy, but some of the structure of Nebbiolo. And to Burgundy, because of the strong and very real connection with terroir, the grapes, the vines are grown on slopes which lie on distinct lava flows, which have very distinct terroirs. In fact, very distinct soil components, compounds. So that one can actually map out these lava flows, and to a certain degree, the sort of the neighborhood patchwork of areas called contradas in Italian and in Sicily, to a certain degree, they reflect those lava flows as well as other demarcations. But so there's this remarkable connection between wine and terroir, and the Nerello Mascalese grape, and also the white grape of Etna, the Caracante, seem to be particularly sensitive to soil. And of course, the elevation varies enormously because Etna is the highest mountain north of the Alps. And it also varies in exposition because it faces, it's at, you know, 360 degrees, but really there's very, very few vineyards on the western face of Etna.
In Chapter 6, you titled Vine Varieties, you're listing all the different varieties and producers, and I see that there are a lot of international grape varieties that are being grown there, but does your heart lie more with the indigenous grape varieties? Is that part of the story that you want to get across more than anything, is for them to keep their identity?
Yes, it is, and actually in the conclusion, which Fran writes, she states very clearly that and it was my belief too, we talked a lot about what the closing sort of wish would be, or that really Sicilians find their own indigenous varieties, because it's sort of the equivalent of them finding their own identities and building on that. But the international varieties have been in Sicily since the 19th century, though they were sort of, there was renewed interest in international varieties like Cabernet and Chardonnay, et cetera.
Yeah.
Beginning really in the 1980s, but really being focused on with respect to vinification, making it to wine in the 1990s, and Sicily, like other regions, had to sort of get attention by making wines that were similar to world wines. But once they'd done that and were successful, now they can really focus on their indigenous varieties, and they're doing that, and I think that's what the market wants.
That makes so much sense. Your explanation makes so much sense. Bill, before I switch back to Fran, let me ask you one question. On page 103, anything that I see the word brut and my eyes are on it, like, you know, flies on you know what. I love sparkling wines. And I never thought of, there's a Murgot Brut Rosé.
Murgot Brut, which is made from a red grape, Nerello Mascalese, the principal grape of Etna. It's the most produced sparkling wine on Etna, and it's really an excellent wine. We just had it the other day, as a matter of fact. It doesn't quite have the lazy character of a brioche, toasty character of a French champagne.
Okay.
But it's very, very nicely produced. And that's a testament to, usually, you know, when you're making a sparkling wine, you need to have a lot of acidity. It's easy to get that at high elevations, and these are high elevation vineyards.
And also, isn't that easier to get from vines that are growing in volcanic soil?
Is it easy to make sparkling wines?
No, but easier to achieve higher acidity in the wine.
The acidity would be more related to elevation grape variety and viticultural techniques and moment of harvest than anything else. The actual soil is has a lot of micronutrients. It needs a little bit of nitrogen, phosphate, and potassium, and manure, really, which does it naturally, to give it more, to make it more plantable. It takes years to turn lava into something you can plant.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Lynn, the history of sparkling wine production on Etna goes back to the late 19th century. There was a Sicilian baron named Spitalieri who was making and exporting sparkling wine that was receiving awards at international wine fairs around the world.
Mm-hmm. And he was actually using Pinot Noir and Pinot varieties. This was 1860, Pinot Noir was introduced into Sicily.
About the period of Sicily's unification into Italy. And what was so interesting about our research is that much of this period of history was even lost to Sicilians. They had this proto-modern quality wine industry that was being born from the 1860s to the very beginning of the 20th century that with the Depression and two world wars was largely wiped away, only to be rediscovered and emerge beginning in the 1980s.
I appreciate, and I'm sure that everyone else who is a student of wine appreciates the fact that you have included dedicated a section to notes and a selected bibliography. So this people can capitalize on all your hard work going forward.
And really to sort of solidify the scholarly value of the book, that it's really rooted in real research. And
yes.
Even the literature that we refer to, because we were taking a 360-degree look at terroir, and Sicilian literature was a beautiful medium in order to explore kind of the cultural aspects of Sicily. And certainly Sicilian authors like Luigi Pirandello and Salvatore Quasimodo, who were both Nobel laureates in literature, expressed kind of their island and had an authentic voice. And, yeah. And Sicily's wine growers are doing that now. And so literature also seemed like a kind of ideal metaphor.
So we really try and explain the Sicilian mentality and how that mentality applies to the wine industry. We unflinchingly point out some issues that Sicilians have, and which perhaps most listeners would connect to, you know, crime.
Yes.
Organized crime, but yeah. But we don't really focus on the mafia. We focus on the root sort of behavioral and cultural issues that out of which it was the mafia could arise, mm-hmm. And thankfully, the wine industry is not strongly connected to the mafia. There isn't enough money made in the wine industry for them to be interested in it.
But you're right. And for the reader who's more curious about either the literary or socioeconomic, political, or as Bill said, mafia-related, there's so much in those notes in the bibliography for readers to explore on their own.
Well, you weave it all together so nicely as a narrative. This is not off-putting at all. This is a very, very good read. I mean, I haven't had the book long, and I was able to plow through, you know, sitting up in bed reading several pages.
Yeah, it's really a book to read. We have some maps which are of my design. The intention was that they were artisanal and not sort of manufactured maps. And we had the option of putting in photographs, but we really wanted the written word to carry our message. And also it was just added cost to add photos and maps. But probably it would be a good idea while reading the book to have a map on hand. You can download a big map of Sicily. That would be a help.
We have a dear friend who said to us upon the publication of our book, we do hope that this is one book that can be judged by its cover. And as Bill said, the only photo in the book is of the cover on the inside flap. And for those who haven't seen it yet, the photo is of the Temple of Segesta, a 5th century limestone temple.
Well, if you would,
in the foreground,
if you would like to learn more, the website is theworldofsicilianwine.blogspot.com. Bill Nesto, Master of Wine, Francis D. Savino, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn, and thank you to your listeners.
You're listening to iWine Radio.